It's 4:23 right now in the capital. This is Chris Golds with you on Drive. Let's take a look at the US election now then. And Donald Trump saying the economic plan that he unveiled yesterday is going to help restore America's prosperity. Plus, he's accused Hillary Clinton of offering yesterday's solutions to problems of today. But Mr. Trump's problems are growing. Another top Republican in the US Senate says she won't be voting for him this November. And more than 50 top Republican national security experts have published an open letter also saying they won't be backing Mr. Trump in the US presidential election. Let's go live to Washington now and our US correspondent Simon Marks. Very good afternoon to you, Simon. Let's start first of all, well, rarely at this election campaign, with policy. Donald Trump finally unveiling something, his economic plan. What policy proposals is he actually offering then?
Yes, and not just unveiling it, Chris, but actually talking about it. I mean, it was quite a curious moment when Donald Trump stepped up to the microphones at the Detroit Economic Club and read from the teleprompter one of those rare speeches where he didn't extemporize, he didn't ad-lib. His handlers managed to persuade him to keep reading the text that was in front of him and really dwell on economic policy and detail the plans that he says can help make America grow again and make America great again. There's been a lot of attention focused on his tax proposals. He's talking about cutting taxes and halving the number of tax brackets that exist here in the United States. He'd bring rates down, depending, of course, on your income level, to 12%, 25%, and 33%. So a three-tier bracket of tax rates that people would pay, unless they were the poorest of Americans, in which case they would qualify for a zero tax rate. That's something that he included in his initial economic proposals, and he's kept it in place in this economic plan, which is a refinement of the plan that he made public during the primary process. He's also talking once again about renegotiating trade deals. He's talking about restarting the Keystone XL pipeline, that controversial oil pipeline that environmentalists oppose and that the Obama administration had blocked. He's not talking very much about high-tech jobs, new economy jobs, and a number of analysts watching the speech found that a touch surprising, especially considering that he's branding himself the change agent who can usher in America's tomorrows, while he's talking about Hillary Clinton very much as a person from yesterday.
All Hillary Clinton has to offer is more of the same: more taxes, more regulations, more bureaucrats, more restrictions on American energy and on American production. More of that. If you were a foreign power looking to weaken America, you couldn't do better than Hillary Clinton's economic agenda.
So Donald Trump speaking very confidently about his economic plan. It will now at some point be scored by independent analysts. There are already some projections that suggest that he could add trillions of dollars to the national debt, but people are still going through the details of this proposal. Some, however, didn't wait for the ink to be dried on the policy plans. Donald Trump, during that speech, was interrupted no fewer than 14 times by protesters in the room, each one of them standing up, shouting their opposition to him until they were escorted out of the room. He barely responded to them. He showed a good deal more maturity during that speech yesterday than he has on other occasions on the campaign trail. But those protests did, to some extent, get in the way of the Trump campaign's desire for the day to be focused entirely on that economic plan being unveiled.
Mm-hmm. He wasn't just facing problems in the room, though, was he? He also finished his speech, presumably pretty pleased with himself, to discover that more prominent Republicans had announced that they are not going to be supporting him in November, just adding to that list.
Absolutely. Absolutely. He can't at the moment win for losing. Last night, a very prominent Republican, Susan Collins, a senator from Maine, name probably doesn't mean very much back in the UK, but here in Washington, D.C., she is considered an influential voice within the Republican Republican Party, and she announced that she is not going to be able to vote for Donald Trump or support him in November. And then, late last night, 50 Republican national security officials, many of them what are referred to here in Washington as formers, former national security advisors, former assistant secretaries of state and deputy assistant secretary of state, they all signed an open letter saying that Donald Trump, quote, lacks the character, values and experience to be president, would put at risk our country's national security and well-being. And just in case you were in any doubt about where they stood, they concluded that Donald Trump would be the most reckless president in American history. And again, those are Republicans talking about the Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump. Enormously problematic for him. The only thing the Trump campaign could point to yesterday was one fresh endorsement, which came from Congressman Kevin McCarthy. He leads the Republicans in the House of Representatives, those terriers in the House of Representatives who have made Barack Obama's life such a misery. And he says Donald Trump is a much better alternative to Hillary Clinton.
The amount of poverty that we have in America, 94 million Americans out of the workforce, they'll move them up. Government itself, do you want the status quo? Because that's what Hillary is, the exact definition of status quo. I don't think anyone's shooting for that. They want to see a change.
But, you know, Kevin McCarthy is no Susan Collins of Maine, and he is no former national security advisor. And this is just, I think, going to create ongoing enormous problems for Donald Trump's campaign, with every single poll now showing Hillary Clinton between 8 and 10 points clear of him. One poll last night suggesting she may have an even larger advantage than that. He's at the point now where he would have to break every single historical precedent that opinion polls have ever secured in order to stand any chance of actually beating her this November. It's becoming a one-horse race.
Wow. Now, he's also facing a new challenger in the election, isn't he? Evan McMullen. Who is he? Does he stand any chance at all?
No chance whatsoever. I have to say I'm somewhat surprised by the amount of attention that this announcement yesterday received internationally. Evan McMullen is completely unknown, not just in the United States, but frankly here in Washington, D.C. I mean, I'd certainly never heard of him until yesterday. He was apparently a policy director for the Republicans up on Capitol Hill. One of the reasons why he may not be particularly well-known publicly is because he's also a former CIA operative, so he doesn't have a huge public profile here in the United States. He suddenly decided that he was going to throw his hat into the presidential race as an independent. I mean, he is a Republican, but it's too late now for him to stand as a Republican. So he's going to run as an independent, and he says it's never too late to do the right thing and to take a stand against someone as bigoted and dangerous as Donald Trump. The truth of the matter is that for Mr. McMullen, it is too late now to take a stand. He will not be able to get on the ballot in anywhere near 50 states from coast to coast. He doesn't have any organization. He doesn't appear to have any money. And he doesn't appear to have any immediate campaign manifesto other than a desire to stop Donald Trump. I mean, I think more interestingly, there are other third-party candidates out there. Gary Johnson from the Libertarian Party, Jill Stein from the Green Party. You and I haven't discussed them over the past few months. But we probably should start talking about them occasionally, because if you look at the polls, Gary Johnson is now pulling between 8 and 9%, and at least two Republican members of Congress have endorsed him for the presidency, not Donald Trump. And you've got Jill Stein, the Green Party candidate, who in most surveys is pulling about 3%. So the numbers are small, but they are not infinitesimal. And should the race between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump tighten between now and November, Gary Johnson and Jill Stein could become interesting figures to watch.
OK, well, we'll certainly keep an eye on that one, Simon. Now, I'm really, really excited about these TV debates. I think they're going to be absolutely extraordinary. But there seems to be some sort of speculation that Mr. Trump might not be 100% committed to those TV debates with Hillary Clinton. They're due to start What, next month? Any news on that?
September the 26th is the first debate. It's supposed to take place at Hofstra University in New Jersey. Donald Trump is definitely squidgy on the issue of whether he's going to participate in these debates. And in a bid to try and get clarity on that, and also, I think, in a bid to try and embarrass him, Hillary Clinton's campaign said yesterday publicly she will be there. She will be at all three presidential debates. Tim Kaine will be at the vice presidential debate. The Democrats are all in as far as the debates are concerned, and they challenged Donald Trump to say that he's all in as well. There has been silence from the Trump campaign on that issue over the last few hours. I suspect that at some point today or tomorrow he is bound to make himself available for interview somewhere, and presumably someone will ask him to clarify if he is going to show up or not. But there's definitely internal discussion about the benefits and possible disadvantages for Donald Trump of showing up to participate in those debates. And the Clinton team think they've got him on the back foot. They are very eager to try and goad him either into saying, I'll see you there on September the 26th, or into saying, I'm not so sure.
No, I thought they were compulsory, unlike the debates that we've been having over here.
No, they are completely voluntary. Now, you know, we know the dates and we know the venues because there's this organization here called the Commission on Presidential Debates, which is bipartisan. Some of the people who run it are Republicans. Some of the people who run it are Democrats. And they negotiate the dates with the parties and then they negotiate the rules for the debates with the individual campaigns. So notionally, we've got three debates, one in New Jersey, one in Las Vegas, and I think the third one is in St. Louis, if memory serves, and then one vice presidential debate down in Virginia. But people like me are all wondering, are these things really going to happen, or would Donald Trump risk breaking historical precedent? You know, they've been part of the political landscape here since the Richard Nixon, John F. Kennedy debates back in 1960. And the idea that you would have a presidential election without a TV debate seems counterintuitive, and it would be ironic if it was the master showman, Donald Trump, you know, the star of television, who decided, actually, I'm not sure I want to sit in front of the cameras for 90 minutes with Hillary Clinton.
Some of my favourite episodes of the drama The West Wing are all centred around the TV debates. So it'd be absolutely extraordinary, if you say, if Donald Trump decides to not take part.
And it's also just worth making the point very quickly, Chris, that today the Commission on Presidential Debates has suggested to the venues that they should start at least having a plan for a third podium in case either the Libertarian Party or the Green Party get above the 15% mark in the opinion polls, at which point they would then be entitled to participate in those debates.
So that'd be groundbreaking as well, then?
Well, imagine a debate between Hillary Clinton, who showed up, and Gary Johnson, the Libertarian, who showed up, but not Donald Trump, who stayed away. I mean, it all starts getting very interesting.
Well, let's talk about Mrs. Clinton just for a moment. She had an unexpected supporter who turned up at her rally yesterday in Florida.
Very bizarre story. This spotted, I have to say, by a very intrepid local television reporter down in Florida. Hillary Clinton was addressing a rally just south of Orlando, and over her shoulder, behind her in the crowd throughout the rally, you can see the father of the gunman responsible for the Pulse nightclub massacre. Sadiq Mateen is the father's name. He's there throughout the rally, cheering Hillary Clinton, taking pictures of her with his cell phone. He doesn't react when at one point during the rally she pays tribute to the police officers who ran into the nightclub in order to try and head off further carnage and violence. His son, Omar Mateen, of course, responsible for killing 49 revelers at the Pulse nightclub in Orlando just a matter of 2 weeks ago. The Clinton campaign has put a statement out here in the last couple of hours saying that they were unaware that he was present in the room. It was a public event. He hadn't specifically been invited. The extraordinary thing about it is not just that he was there, and he told reporters afterwards, I'm a supporter of Hillary Clinton. I've got every right to come out and express my support for her. The extraordinary thing is that he's sitting literally right over her shoulder. I mean, those are, if you're one of the advance team running these events for Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, you usually have a very, very good sense of who is in the camera shot behind them because you don't want any problems to arise or any sort of security issues to arise. So the idea that they didn't actually know he was there, given the prominent location where he was sitting at that rally, is pretty extraordinary.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Simon Marks, our US correspondent, once again confirming that there is nothing surprising about the US election race anymore. Thank you, Simon. And don't forget, you can subscribe to Simon's weekly podcast about the presidential election. It's called The Race for the White House. It's out every Friday. It's free as well. You can subscribe to it at lbc.co.uk.